Podcast Landon. Welcome back to the Front Row Network of Podcasts, and welcome to another in our Oscar Spotlight series. We are going through all the major nominees, gearing up for this year's Academy Awards on Sunday, February the 9th. And tonight, we're going to be talking about one of the major contenders for a couple of big awards, a six-time nominee. We're going to be talking about Netflix's Marriage Story. So I'm really looking forward to talking about this. I've seen this movie twice now. I'm a big fan of it. There's a lot of stuff to get into. We will get into a little bit of, spoilery talk as per some of these other podcasts that you've heard. But we'll talk a little bit about what we liked, what we didn't like, and then we'll get into what it's all nominated for and what we think it's going to win and what we hope it's going to win on Oscar night. So joining me for this discussion tonight, first off, a regular to the Front Row Network now and a regular to these Oscar spotlights. You just keep going through them. Please welcome back Aaron McCabe. How's it going, Aaron?
It's great. Jeremy's got us on a tight schedule to be pumping out this content for everybody for NPR. And I said on another podcast, you know, accountants have tax season, the hospitals have flu season. And here at the Front Row, we have award season.
We do. We're all chained to our basements right now. watching screeners and then getting in front of our laptops and talking about it and arguing about it maybe sometimes and harmoniously disagreeing. We save the nasty stuff for our Facebook chats.
There you go.
But rounding out the panel tonight, someone new to our Oscar spotlights, but actually a frequent guest on Guilty Pleasures, who was on my most recent Guilty Pleasures episode of Bad Boys 2. Welcome back, Tim Tierney. How's it going, Tim?
Great, Lou. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be a part of the Front Row as always, and especially getting to be a part of Guilty Pleasures and as well as the great sports movie debate was a wonderful time. So I'm excited to be a part of this too.
Yeah. And a lot of parallels between Marriage Story and Bad Boys 2.
They're pretty countless.
It's like watching the same movie.
Right. Pretty much. Like it was, I was like, am I watching the same thing? You know, Noah Baumbach.
Vampire in Marriage Story, but you know what? I think I can, we'll do okay.
Yeah. The scene where Adam Driver threw a corpse out of a van, I thought I don't want to get too spoilery, but you know, it was, sure. You know, a little bit, but clearly Noah Baumbach learned a lot from Michael Bay. Are there any two more disparate filmmakers than Michael Bay and Noah Baumbach?
Jeez. Quite a juxtaposition we have here this evening.
We contain multitudes here at the Front Row.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so let's dive into it. So as I just mentioned, Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, written and directed by him, it is up for six Academy Awards this year, including Best Original Screenplay, Best Original Score, Supporting Actress for Laura Dern, Leading Actress for Scarlett Johansson, Leading Actor for Adam Driver, and of course, Best Picture. So before we talk about its Oscar chances and what we like about those noms and what we don't, let's talk about the movie itself. For those of you who haven't seen it, Marriage Story deals with a couple who is processing a divorce. We start the film as they have already discussed their separation, and then we kind of go through the process of how they complete their divorce and what that impact is on themselves, on their child, and how they pull themselves through it. So I want to start off, Tim, I want to start with you because I know when we had talked about Oscar Spotlights, you had mentioned wanting to come on here. So I'm glad we could get you on. So I just want to talk about what your thoughts and what drew you to Marriage Story in particular.
So when it first, I actually started following, this is one of the first movies it is the only movie I've actually followed on Instagram when it first came out, when they first had teasers for it. And just a little bit about my personal history, 18 months ago, I was very, in a very similar situation, navigating my own divorce. And so I think that was what naturally drew me to it. And when you see the names attached to it, not only on the acting side of things, but writing, directing, the music, I've always been a Randy Newman fan. And when you hear the lineup, you just, I automatically went, I feel like I have to follow this movie. So I kind of watched it through its progress through various various film awards, like a lot of the festivals and whatnot, and it did very well, as I expected it would be with that lineup that was involved in this one. And you can't help it with the Front Row itself, movies, no matter what kind they are, you can't help but draw your own parallels personally to it. So that's what originally drew me to it, and as well as just the lineup of it itself. And so I had been anticipating to release this movie in a sort of macabre kind of way, masochistic kind of way. Like, okay, as I discussed with my brother Patrick, who I know has been on the Front Row as well from time to time, that I remember sharing with him when this movie came out and they were showing teasers for it. I said, I don't want to see this movie, but there's something inherently in me that says, nah, but you gotta kind of thing. So like I said, I've been anticipating it, and I feel like, I know we'll get into it, but I feel like it absolutely delivered for me.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Aaron, how about you? What were your first impressions, or was Marriage Story on your radar? Anything in particular now that you've kind of gone through some of these screeners? What's your first impressions?
I first heard about Marriage Story through the Front Row thread. So you guys were starting to talk about it. And I think what the first murmurs I actually heard were in regards to Scarlett Johansson's performance, and how raw and phenomenal she was in that, because I think it was starting to be talked about, like, who is going to be up for what awards. And I thought that people had started speaking about Scarlett Johansson in Jojo Rabbit and Marriage Story. And I think when you guys had started talking about it, it had not quite been released yet. So I believe was The Irishman released first on Netflix and then Marriage Story?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we were all elbows deep into Irishman. And then after The Irishman delivered, after Netflix delivered on that, I was like, oh my gosh, please give me another movie. And everyone's talking about Marriage Story. So I dove into that. And that's really how I got into it. And first impressions, I mean, it's a great film. And it's a compelling story that I think is a very important one to tell. And I think what's interesting about it, as far as the other movies who are up for Best Picture, like, this one is not, it's not an action film. It's not a thriller. It's not fast moving. It's not fast paced, but it is, it's great. It's poignant. So yeah, I think it's a movie that everyone should see for some insight into what it probably is. I don't know, Tim, you'll have to tell us your opinion of, like, what it's like to go through a divorce, and also to see what it's like without even the divorce, like, what it's like to go through the dismantling and dissolution of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm right with you. I saw it when it first came out. I watched it. It was the one of the few that I knew of the Oscar movies I knew I could watch on a plane and not get in trouble. Mm-hmm. it's plane safe, everybody. Booksmart, by the way, is not.
Good old plane safe. Yes,
exactly. Nobody's gonna look over and see, like, random, like, dismemberments or nudity or something like that.
Yeah,
you know. But I remember I was totally engrossed seeing it, and I like how you mentioned, Aaron, it is easily the least spectacular in terms of the production value. It's a very grounded, humanistic film that I don't think, if you look at all the other Best Picture nominees, they all have kind of an element of spectacle to them, whether it's like a period piece like A Little Women or Jojo Rabbit, or whether it's got, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has like the opulence of, you know, and all of those things. But this is just kind of a slice of life type film. I actually watched it when I rewatched it today. It was on a double feature with 1917.
And I don't know, how are you feeling today?
Ooh,
that is emotionally heavy.
Ooh, I am feeling some stuff. But the main thing that I was like, it was the main thing was like, man, Best Picture is such a weird title. It's such a weird category, because how can you watch 1917 and Marriage Story and even compare the two?
Right.
On what metric are we comparing these movies? Because that's that, like, and not to say that they're both really good in their own ways. I'll have my Oscar ballot for the website next week. But, you know, it's just like, how do you compare and contrast movies like this? But in short, what I loved about this movie is at its core is the writing and the acting. It's a very performance driven movie. So it doesn't, you know, you'll notice it's not nominated for costume design or production design or any of those things, but it's nominated for me in the categories I always gravitate towards, which is screenplay and acting. So let's get into it. It's the main crux of the film is how it handles the topic of divorce and how it handles the, as you mentioned, Aaron, the dissolution of the relationship. So, Tim, I'd like to ask you, as somebody who's, you know, been through that process, do you feel like the film accurately portrayed that? Were there things that you found that, you know, that were, you know, similar to your experience?
Well, what's so intricate about it is what drew me to the movie. And when I first saw that this movie like this was being created, and when I first saw a teaser online, I don't remember where I saw the teaser online, but I went, oh my God, there's a movie about this. Like, this is, it's a movie I shouldn't see, but I have to. It's not a Kramer versus Kramer type of situation where it's one person trying to navigate through a difficult situation. It's two people with their own unique perspectives in their relationship, navigating through it, not only their relationship and that's dissolution, but also their parents. And that's the biggest thing. I have three children, and my ex-wife and I, it's a navigating through that. And that's, and you're watching this movie in real time, their emotions, and each step in this whole process, there is a unique step each time with whatever comes up. Our situation wasn't exactly, you know, like this. There wasn't courts involved, but it still was very similar in that both of us were navigating each step, and each step is so unique. And that's what this movie does so, so well, just in my perspective, is that it is Alan Alda pointedly says to Adam Driver in this, this is both of you having to figure this out together, whether you like it or not. I mean, that's what this movie hits on so well. Is that it doesn't put a him versus her or her versus him. And it really is. And I can't speak to all divorces out there, obviously, because all are unique and all are troubling in their own way and difficult in their own way. But this one tells it from a perspective of two people who are good parents, who love their child, their children, that want to navigate this together, but also have to figure out their own stuff between the two of them personally. And that is a whole different relationship and a whole different perspective that Noah does such a very excellent job in describing and pointedly describing in the dialogue and going back and forth in this movie, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's one of his biggest strengths as a filmmaker, as a writer, who I've always enjoyed his work, is that he's very good at mining things out of minutiae and, yes, you know, small moments. And this is a small movie. In many ways, this could be a play someday.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, because it's very dialogue driven. It's not, you know, but it's very, you know, it really delves. And that was the one takeaway for me, was just all the scenes of the minutiae of what it is, of the process of divorce was just like,
it's emotional minutiae. It really is, Lou. That's a great point. That's exactly what it really seems like, well, this is kind of basic stuff, but when you factor in all the emotional things involved, you get that phrase, emotional minutiae. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And and I'm glad you brought up too, one of the things that I think is interesting about this movie, and maybe let's talk about it. Cause really this is a two character piece. You know, you have Adam Driver's character and you have Scarlett Johansson's character. And, you know, as you pointed out, Tim, they're both going through this, and the film, I think, attempts to do it in an even-handed way. But the interesting thing is I have talked to some people who have kind of taken sides one way or another, you know, and I don't know. I think sure. that's kind of common.
That's natural human instinct. Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I guess, you know, I know I've had some Charlie has his baggage and Nicole has hers. So, you know, they're both, you know, things that they do well and things that they don't, but it is interesting to hear, if the instinct was to take a side. So I guess, Aaron, I'd ask you the question. When you watch this movie, do you find yourself taking a side, or how was your experience watching these two interact?
No, I didn't find myself taking a side. And I don't know if that's also because I grew up, my parents they started their divorce process right after I graduated college. But I watched their relationship dissolve before that. So I think there is probably a part of me already hardwired when looking at a story like this that's going through a divorce, that kind of already can see like there's usually almost 100% of the time fault on both sides to some degree, that there is some sort of personal responsibility. And I think that what stood out for me at first when in the beginning, the first scene, they're sitting there and they're trying to do counseling, and Nicole is not wanting to participate for whatever reason. You don't know the background, but she at that point is very shut off and not willing to read what's on her paper and go over it. And so like, it's like little things like that, that I think you see on both sides, where each party is either, you know, they're hurt or they're, you know, they're stuck in their ego, or they're just not willing to, they're not comfortable communicating part of that. And you know, you kind of see it all build up into that scene close to the end where it really does just kind of blow up. So no, I didn't think I had sympathy and compassion for both sides, and I both for Charlie and Nicole. And I also saw moments where I was like, oh man, like wincing at what they were doing in those moments too.
Mm-hmm.
What about you guys?
Well, I think there's a natural instinct, especially like not in just personal relationships, but also like in film. You know, we're taught when we watch movies that there's a good guy and a bad guy. There's a protagonist and an antagonist. And so some of it is the natural like inclination of a viewer to sit there and say, okay, who's causing the problem? Who's the root cause of the problem?
Okay, so I will speak to that. And so I think that's where while I was watching the film, the protagonists to me were Nicole and Charlie, and the antagonist was the actual court system and divorce to me.
Very well put, Aaron. Very well put.
I was so frustrated by the process and them going through it that I was like, this should shine a spotlight on how fragmented and ridiculous this system is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was what I took away.
Yeah, I know. I think you're right. And so, you know, I had this discussion with a member of the network who I won't name since they're not on the podcast, but mentioned that, you know, because that they had a hard time not finding Nicole to be the one at fault because she's the one who hires the lawyer. As you kind of point out, Aaron, you know, really the question right. you could ask yourself is, would things have gotten this bad for them if they had not, if they had worked it out for the, each other? Had they hired the lawyers, would it still have gotten ugly? I would think that, yeah, it probably would still to a degree.
Sure.
But the fact that she's the one who lawyers up first and brings in Laura Dern's character, who I know we're going to have some thoughts about in a few minutes, is the reason. And I can understand that, but I also, to me, I think what the film was trying to say was that this was destined to go bad at some point, that there was going to be like, it was going to bottom out at some point, whether lawyers were involved or not. Mm-hmm. And so you can't fault one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, you're exactly right. Whether we like it or not, this, and as Aaron has wonderfully alluded to, the system calls for that, unfortunately. That there has to be some sort of legal muck that has to be involved, where things, and I think the system leans towards that, that there has to be some sort of ugliness involved in that, that, yeah, I mean, if you want to set legal precedents, I know Alan Alda alluded to this in one of his meetings with Adam Driver, that the reason the system is set this way because there are people who just abandon their families and there's no recourse for the family that was abandoned at all. And that sometimes this way, but this is where it heads. But just again, what Aaron was saying is that the system just kind of calls for that, which kind of sucks, which would Noah does a great job, I think, touching on that as well. And then, mm-hmm. and then letting the viewers know that, like, yeah, this couple really wants to make it work. They really want to make it work, that the relationship isn't salvageable, but they still want to make things work. But unfortunately, just the way things are in this universe and this legal system, we have to head this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt like the most maddening part. And from what I, mm-hmm. like, from my lens, was that not even the system, but yes, I guess to put some responsibility on people, and I think there is on both characters.
Sure.
You're right. Nicole pulls the trigger first. But there were also times, especially in the beginning, where Charlie, and I think this does happen with men, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was kind of avoidant of like not bringing up issues, probably not wanting to rock the boat when things sure. were falling apart. And again, you think these are human qualities. So this movie is exposing us to the human experience of when we're involved in a relationship. But the things crumble and I think why things got so bad is instead of like, as hard and as painful as it is, even through a time like divorce, you still have to turn to each other. And it's probably the hardest time in a relationship when you have to do that, but by turning away from each other and then involving all the outside parties is of course why things got, you know, markedly, markedly worse as the movie went on, which was yep. a maddening experience to watch. Because mm-hmm. what they did need to do the whole time was talk. They did. Everyone kept saying it. Well, you need to talk to each other. And like 75% of the movie, they weren't, they were still going through the lawyers. They were still going through their parents and their friends and everything. And it was mm-hmm. maddening.
And that's what they did. It's such a great job. What yeah. Noah did here and just the direction and everything and all the actors involved is that they it's still a completely new process for everyone involved. Not yeah. just, I'm not just a couple. I mean, everyone, the families and everything is yeah. so new. So everybody's just trying to figure it out. And that's what I think was an endearing quality in this is that there wasn't a singular character here without some sort of anybody with emotional connection or involvement in that relationship
knew what they were doing. It was only the lawyers that knew, because they're emotionally disconnected, as what you were alluding to, Aaron, that, oh, yeah, well, this is how the process works. This is how it's going to go, blah, blah, blah. But the emotional the characters had emotional involvement didn't know what they were doing. And that's what this movie showcased so very well, is that there was no person in this movie with emotional involvement that just, well, this is how it's going to be, and this is what I want, that's how it is, the end. Like, no, there was none of that. And it conveyed that very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's interesting to me, the character of Charlie, that I find interesting, because it's set in the theater world and he's a director. I've never directed on Broadway or off Broadway or off Broadway.
Really? I thought you would have directed off Broadway by now.
You know, I don't know if Davenport or Macomb, Illinois, count how far off Broadway that's considered.
Clinton, Iowa, I think has some spots.
To me, it counts.
Okay. Thank you. It's the Broadway of the Midwest.
That's right.
The Broadway of Mississippi.
But you know,
there you go.
But one of the things about, you know, being a director is the ability to kind of tell people how they're feeling and to manipulate people to do based on what you think the script calls for. And the character of Charlie, I think, is interesting because he is that guy who thinks he can kind of guide his way through everything. And there's all, like, the one thing on my rewatch was note how many times he negated what somebody else was saying. Even though he wasn't like listening, he was like, because every time they kept bringing up going, the divorce being in LA, he goes, no, we're a New York family. And everyone around him is telling him, no, I'm sorry. That's, and like everyone tells him that. He's like, no, we're this. No, it's this. No, it's this. And it's like, it's a guy.
I'm a director.
Exactly. It's like what I find, you know, that's where I was like, you know, I find things I like about these characters and human, you know, foibles in them. And his biggest one to me was that this, like, he's wanting to control everything and he just doesn't. And he doesn't kind of, in the moment that he like kind of gives in towards the end of the film, when he kind of embraces that, okay, this is the new normal, is when things start to get better. You know, he embraces the change. And that's what I really enjoyed about that character. But to watch him just kind of, you know, almost smugly sometimes be like, no, this, what are you doing? That's silly. You know, and Adam Driver has that kind of natural air about him, you know, that it's like, yeah, he pulls that off and makes it seem very believable. And watching him go through that is, I think, frustrating and endearing at the same time. But let's talk about then. So let's before we move on, anything about the character of Charlie or Adam Driver's performance before we talk about Scarlett Johansson?
There's nothing I'm finding that Adam Driver does that's bad. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just, whatever he's in, he just kind of lights up the screen. Mm-hmm. He really does. I'm just always impressed with him. So that's it.
You know, I was trying to think, this and Black Klansman are the only non-Star Wars things I've seen him in.
Yeah.
But you know, I've enjoyed him. It's interesting to see when an actor just kind of blows up, and maybe I wasn't there for the initial impact, because I know he was on Girls.
I saw him in Girls.
Okay. And I think, you know, and then it was like, oh, the guy from Girls is now the bad guy in the new Star Wars trilogy. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting choice. But you know, he really is turned in some just really fine performances, at least the ones that I have seen. And you know, even in the Star Wars films, I think he adds something to it that maybe, well, that's a whole nother topic. That's a Star Wars discussion. But so any thoughts, Tim, on the character of Charlie or Adam Driver's performance?
I don't know if I have much more to add to what you said, Lou, that what he was trying to understand, him being a director. I mean, that's that, you put it perfectly, that while he's, although at one point he's an off-Broadway director, but then he becomes a Broadway director, technically, after getting the MacArthur grants and But he's very much a director. Like, well, this is the setting, and I'm supposed to kind of call the shots here from what I see and what I interpret. But from what I see and what I interpret is fluid. It is changing in front of me, and I have to understand this is a moving target in front of me. How do I navigate this? Well, wait a minute. You said this at one point. I'm supposed to compute it in this way, but wait, okay. So no, but I have to do it. I mean, I don't want to get too wordy in what you're saying, because I mean, you hit it perfectly that he's very comes across as a New York play director in that way, where he knows what he has to, how he has to call the shots, but he knows also in front of him that everything is going on is changing and it's moving, and he has to try and keep up. But he also has to maintain control in a way, which is unique. And Adam Driver does a great job in portraying that, in that I'm not going to see somebody going, okay, that's the way it is. Like, no, this is constantly moving. I have to find a lawyer. I have to do this. But wait a minute, you said this at one point, and he comes across and delivers that perfectly in that way of knowing that I think this has to be a certain way, but I'm also trying to figure out where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing too, that as you were talking about, it just kind of came to my mind too, was that he doesn't really think that the divorce is going to change anything in the beginning of the film. You know, he just thinks, okay, we're just not going to be together, but we're going to be in New York. We're still going to have the kid. She's just not going to live with me. Like, he's the one that's kind of like blown away he's naive in that sense, sure. This changes everything.
Yep.
Well, I think when he thought that it was going to, when they were going to live in New York, probably nothing for him was going to change.
No.
And he was resistant to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting, because then, you know, that brings us to Scarlett Johansson's character, mm-hmm. Who is the one who wants the change. So Nicole is an actress. If you haven't seen the film, Nicole, you know, Charlie's the director, and Nicole is this actress who had, you know, was in a hit movie, but then, you know, married Charlie and became a theater actress in New York. And upon their separation, she goes to LA and gets a pilot and her career, you know, is working to regain her career. I know we're going to talk about Nicole, but Charlie's immediately dismissive of. Like, there's so many times it's like, oh, when the pilot's done, you're going to come back. He never once, like, considers the fact that, hey, pilots get picked up, and pilots go to series, and she could do 13 episodes, and she could do 10 seasons and be there for 10 years. Like, he's so naive to that. Like, for a guy who seems to, like, be, you know, so intelligent, he's really just naive to that.
Yeah. And let's also, I mean, I know we're getting into Nicole, but like, I get like people want to side with somebody. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget Charlie had an affair. she may have lawyered up first, but like he went outside the relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing real quick, Aaron, that I wish I can like, that's it. There's one thing about this movie, like I wish wasn't that. As far as picking sides, I don't want to.
I don't either.
As a call, but I want to pick sides. But like, I wish there wasn't that aspect in there. Not because like, oh, why does all that to show the man is cheating? Like, that's not what it's totally not what I'm getting at. But it's just like, if it was Scarlett Johansson that had the affair, either way, it was like, I wish there wasn't an allusion to an affair.
No, I get that. Yeah, I get that, because there are so many divorces that happen or dissolution of relationships just because people grow apart.
And there is, exactly.
Yeah, without an extramarital affair or anything. So, and they have to go through the same process and the same pain and everything. So I get that.
Yeah, and I think that's too, for anybody who wants to be like, well, it's Nicole's fault. It's like, well, we see her fire the first shot, per se, of the divorce process.
Right.
But you know, you could argue he got that ball rolling by, you know, stepping out of the marriage, and whether or not he has the affair or not, does the marriage stay? Would they have gotten divorced anyway? I think they probably, right, they probably would have, but you know, maybe later on in life, or who knows. But yeah, but one of the things I do think is smart that Baumbach does is he doesn't show the affair, because I think that would almost definitely paint Charlie as the villain, and I don't think that's what he's going for. I know we'll talk about scenes in later on when he tries to contextualize it. He tries to give his defense of why he does that, and whether or not that lands with anybody is up to, you know, you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, Nicole is the one who wants to move on. She wants to get get on with her life and start. And so let's talk a little bit about Scarlett Johansson's performance, because she's nominated for Best Actress along with Adam Driver for Best Actor. She's actually nominated twice this year. She's up for Best Supporting Actress for Jojo Rabbit. But let's talk a little bit about her character and her performance. Tim, what are your initial thoughts on her character?
Where she first opens up, I can't help but think of my own personal experience, because that's what good movies, I think, do to us, when they bring up our own personal experience in life. Where she first hits me, as in, wow, she just nailed that, is they have a sort of a quasi cast party after a show. I'm not sure the name of the restaurant or bar that they're at afterwards. And it's an excellent scene where they know what's going down. They know what's happening. They know the dynamic. They're starting to understand the dynamic in their relationship. And Adam Driver's just sitting there watching TV, not really looking at her while he's talking. And she still knows the dynamic of the relationship. They both know, obviously, the dynamic of the relationship, but now there's a weird position that they're both in that they're trying to navigate. But she still tells him, like, hey, I know you have, because he's a director and she's a star in the show. And he says, or she says, I know you have notes for me. And he's like, no, it's fine. It won't matter anyway, because you're going, you know, again, you're trying to, like, well, you're going to LA, so, you know, it won't matter. She's like, well, I know you won't go to sleep without it. And so he delivers a couple notes to her. And it's very much, it's a great scene, because that is where I think Scarlett Johansson, you know, Nicole's character really starts, or really it hits her for the first time. I mean, not the first time, but I mean, maybe, yeah, I'll go with that. It is for the first time where she realizes that, like, this is no longer my husband. That my director just gave me a couple notes. I guess we're living together. We have a child together. And just like, okay, well, good night. And she goes off to bed. And right as she is out of the shot, and or she walks away from Adam Driver's character, her tears start flowing from her, because she has that moment of, this is no longer my husband. We're no longer those people that we vowed to be. And so she has a great moment as an actress where she just goes, okay, good night. And it's almost, I mean, it's immediate. As soon as she turns away and walks away from the room that Adam Driver's in, tears immediately start flowing from her. It's not just like, oh, she gets to the bed, then starts crying. Like, she's just like, just trying to hold back the emotions. And it really is. So that moment for me was like, oh, Scarlett, mm-hmm, awesome. That's you hit it perfectly. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of people will talk about the scene where, and it also was very good, where she's in Laura Dern's office and she has a great monologue and her just essentially just, it just, well, just keeps talking. It just, the about monologue, their relationship. Thank you. that also is a beautiful, beautifully executed, terrific scene as well. Mm-hmm. But those two moments for me, she hits perfectly in this movie.
Well, and the moment, you know, that first, I'm glad you pointed out that first scene, because I think we'll unpack the monologue scene in a minute here. But that opening scene, I'm glad that you brought it up, because it's also prefaced by the scene, the moment where she's talking about the TV script and asking him what he thinks. And he says,
I don't watch TV.
While he's watching TV.
And a great shot. Yep. They show up like, she like looks over and he's watching TV. Yep.
And he's like, she's looking at it and you see it all on her face of you are so dismissive of me.
Yep.
And I felt that for her in that moment. And she's realizing it. I mean, she's, as you pointed out, Tim, she's realized this before the film has started because they're already broken up. But for us as an audience, it's the first moment where we get to watch her kind of just say, oh, yep, there it is again. Look at me. I'm trying to engage with him. And he's just, he thinks it's stupid and silly. And he never, just like we said earlier, how he doesn't acknowledge the fact that this pilot could be successful.
Yep.
That he's just totally dismissive of her.
Yeah. And I think as a director and what this movie does, and I'm actually really enjoying a lot of different performances and movies that are able to draw these types of emotions out of us as viewers instead. But I think especially in a movie like a divorce or something where you want to have a villain and you want to have a hero, and you're not getting that and you're seeing kind of the evils of both sides, per se, but I think it's easy. I think anger would be an easy emotion to go for, but instead as the viewer, like they're allowing you to see the grief and they're allowing you to see they're opening it up instead of like, everyone's screaming at each other and being mad right off the bat. Like you're watching the grief because usually even with the anger, and as we get into the film and we see more of the anger, the underlying emotion there is still grief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so getting a front row seat to that and having you experience it with them in a culture where we want to get the F away from that as fast as we can and not sit in it. Mm-hmm. Was extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and mm-hmm. yeah, and I think I love what you're both saying because to me, there's, and this will get into when we start talking about some of the awards stuff too. I know it's Oscar season and award show out for performances that are either, oh, they completely transformed themselves into, right. I don't want to throw out names because I'm not going to, rain on anybody else. Pray, but a lot of biopics are all about, oh, they became so and so, or like
they are the character,
right? Or yeah, or like this big method thing where it's like, oh, they lost so many pounds, blah 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 blah. But a lot of that has to do with just like showy stuff, and not to say that like not everybody can do that. That's a skill too. But what's a skill that I think gets forgotten about, and what I find compelling as a audience member is watching somebody, a character, struggle to maintain their emotions and fight for their own like kind of sanity and their own like stability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I loved about this movie is both of these characters are just always on the brink of like, but they are having to keep it together. Because
they're on the brink of figuring it. They're on the brink of figuring out their own emotions,
right? And they're fighting. So now they're like, everything has to be internalized. And they're like, you see it like in Scarlett Johansson. And I think I know we talk a lot about Adam Driver. He gets the like the big like dramatic, the wall punching scene, which I know we'll talk about.
Sure.
But she gets those moments where you like have to watch her like hold back tears. And to me, it's more compelling to watch a character have to hold back tears than it is to watch a character cry.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, it's different tastes, but I just always, because there's that inner conflict in the character. And I think that's what her character really has is she is trying to move on with her life, but she's like she's fighting to break free. He's fighting to like maintain status quo and like, but they both have to keep it together because there's a kid here and there's their own professional ambitions and all that.
And then I think you also have to watch them juggle how out of control some of the like defamation gets in the divorce.
Ugh.
while they both, and they set this up in the beginning of the movie, like they both, and I think this is true for a lot of relationships, as they dismantle, like they both recognize that there are great qualities in this other person and that they don't just believe that they're just this awful human being that is, you know, scathing the earth with their presence. And so to have to also then sit there and kind of digest and swallow what you've done by now, including these external components, but also being like, oh my God, like they're tearing each other apart and having to be like, ah, but you're not that bad. But like, it just like, it's like, oh my gosh, they're just in such a mess, and have to watch them do like a tight wire rope walk with that. Mm-hmm. Was really impressive, Lou. So you're onto something there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the big scenes, because I think when you break down both Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver, they each have kind of, you know, what we would cynically call their Oscar clip scenes, you know, and Scarlett Johansson actually, I think, has two of them, because she's in that fight scene later. But her big one, as you mentioned, Tim, is that monologue scene. Which happens very early in the film, and it basically lays out all the backstory. So I want to open that up before, because I know I have my thoughts, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to just project all of my opinions and tell you, because this is the way it is, people.
This is the Luke show.
Yes.
And, you guys better agree with me. It's my podcast.
Yeah, I'm such a Charlie. but let's talk about this scene. What about, how much did that scene resonate for you? What did you pick up when you saw that, watching that, Tim?
So the phrase, which by the way, literally just came to me like 10 seconds ago, her stream of consciousness. Mm. It's her realization. It's the way Scarlett delivers it. It's not, you can tell it's not just, I mean, obviously it's part of the script, but the way she delivers it is in a manner of, as she's talking, as she's saying it out loud, she's realizing it. She's coming to a realization as she's saying it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, she's internalized, obviously, as a human being, their relationship, but maybe there is someone there. You could tell with her mom, with maybe other people in her life, there hasn't been anyone that has taken the time to ask a very simple question of, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
How are you? And that's where she, and it hits her on the couch, and it's a perfect moment where she's like, I want to give you a canned answer, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't give you a canned answer of like, mm-hmm. You know, doing okay, hanging in there, whatever. She goes, no, that's it. I can't. Mm-hmm. And just word vomits all over Laura Dern. And it really is terrific how she does that. And that she really tries her best to summarize the relationship, because she doesn't want to. She's also holding back in a way of like, oh, I don't want to share everything with you, because, you know, I know Laura Dern, it's not your problem, it's not anything, but still, I still have to get this off my chest. And so just her position and where she is a real perfect place in how she delivers that whole monologue. It really comes from a brilliant place. That's not just, okay, I'm an actress, I'm going to deliver a monologue of how my relationship sucked and go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not that at all. She does a brilliant job of a perfect place and where everything is and how she's feeling at that particular time.
Mm-hmm. All right, Aaron, how about you? Anything you got?
This is probably this hypothetical divorce, this is probably her scene with Laura Dern where she says, how are you doing? Let's hear your side. This is the first time she probably actually gets to sit in front of an unbiased, like someone who does, I shouldn't say unbiased, this is a divorce lawyer, but someone who doesn't know her husband. So she doesn't have to hold back. She doesn't have to try to quell her opinion for the sake of what someone else's opinion is or relationship is with her husband. And you're right, Tim. And I guess I didn't think that much about it in that sense, but what a powerful way to have this monologue in front of you and deliver it in a way as if, right, it's like it's coming to you in real time. Like that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the great things about a great writer. I think the toughest part of screenwriting or any writing is exposition. Getting the audience the information you need to know before as the plot moves forward. And everything she says is information we need to know because mm-hmm. we don't get to see their marriage. We know nothing about their marriage. We open up on the beginning. So we have to get that information, but we get to hear it through her perspective, which also allows us to empathize with her as a character. But as you pointed out, Tim, it's delivered in such a way that she's now getting to process it for the first time. She's somebody who knows she's been unhappy, but now is for the first time getting to lay it all out. And as you pointed out, Tim, I'm so glad you mentioned, because it was the thing that I noticed about it watching it the second time around is, yeah, it absolutely has to be the first time anybody's asked Nicole, are you okay? How are you doing? It is the first time she's shown empathy. Certainly the first time we see her showing empathy in the film, because we see, and that's the other, the contrast is that Charlie has no family. He basically has no support system in his life. Mm-hmm. Whereas Nicole has this support system of her mother and her sister, but her sister's kind of clueless and her mother likes Charlie more than she
her
likes.
Her mother has major boundary problems.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my
sitting, God. Sitting there while she's on the toilet. Like it just, yeah. And Julie Haggard is so great.
Oh, your dead gay father. Like what?
She is just a delight in this movie. She's so good. But she's like, she doesn't offer Nicole that empathy. She doesn't offer, she doesn't want to like comfort her or take her side. She wants her to get back together, like stiff upper lip, get back to make it work, you know? Yep. And so when she's offered that opportunity to, you know, it reminded me of the, you know, I'm not typically a royal family follower, but it reminded me because fine.
We all love Meghan.
We all love Meghan. But there's that there was that story a few weeks ago about, or a couple months ago about when Meghan Markle got asked on Safari on that documentary, where the reporter asked her, "How are you coping? How are you dealing with all of the crap she's been dealt with?" And she has that really human moment where she says, "No one's asked me that."
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Really? No one's asked yet? Like, no.
Yeah. And the person asking in this case is a divorce lawyer, and that's her job to do. We'll talk about her character in a moment, but like it is a sincere moment, and at least it gives her that sounding board, and it's so vital. And yeah, as you pointed out, both of you pointed out, you know, Scarlett Johansson just nails it in, you know, I know how many edits there might have been, but there aren't a lot. So
it seemed like a continuous shot. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, there's a couple of reaction shots to Laura Dern.
Yeah.
But aside from that, you know, it just does feel like a play. Like you're watching somebody just because she's moving and she's, you know, grabbing Kleenexes and just kind of like rambling off the top of her head, but yet processing so much that I think it's just a masterclass of acting. And it's, you know, people, I know Scarlett Johansson at this point in her career has divided some people on, you know, some of her choices, some of the things she said in the press, but you know, like at the end of the day, she is an amazing actress. And that scene's just lights out. But that gets us to the other scene, which is the scene that if you haven't seen the movie, you've seen this scene because it's now lived on in meme culture for forever. Yes. And that's the fight scene that happens pretty late in the film. And it's Adam Driver's maybe biggest, showiest moment in the film. So let's talk about it. Let's get into it. What were your thoughts on the, I guess we'll call it the bottoming out scene of the film. Aaron, let's start with you.
I mean, kind of one of those things, it's like you knew it was coming. Nicole had a tendency to seem like, she, in a lot of women, where they bottle everything up and they don't talk about their true feelings. Like, she clearly either never was able to articulate them all with Charlie, or never felt safe enough to articulate them all, that she'd be dismissed. And so, like, it's got to come out somewhere. Clearly, Charlie hasn't dealt with the reality of how this is progressing. And so it was just, I mean, it was a super powerful scene, definitely uncomfortable to watch these two scream at each other, but also, again, very human. Like, you spend a large portion of this movie, I feel like, getting to see the grief, but there's a lot of anger too. And so I feel like this movie provided an opportunity to, like, normalize all parts of a divorce process. And this was another way to showcase it, of these two people. And again, right, like, the underlying emotion in this was the grief that they were, the hurt that they were both going through. They were hurt at each other. And they just, I mean, you know, they're reduced to, like, children. Mm-hmm. Crying and tired kids at the end of this, who hurt kids. So it was incredibly powerful.
All right, Tim, how about you?
The favorite parts of that scene, and the most relatable to me, was the first 60% of it, where they both start. Yeah. They come from a place of, hey, you know what? Let's have a discussion. Okay, you and I just need. We're just going to talk through this.
Famous last words.
Exactly. That's exactly it, Aaron. And unfortunately, just how human communication and relationships are, and the investment that kind of relationship has to it, it's not going to stay there. It's not going to stay from a place of, like, okay, well, I'm just going to say my part. You're going to say your part. And then, okay, well, I guess we'll be good. And we'll both understand perfectly where we're at. Like, that's not how that stuff goes down.
I've been doing the internet all wrong then, apparently.
Yeah, I'm totally, especially for the Twitter crowd, that is not even comprehensible. Yeah. Comprehensible. Yeah. So when they're both, the part that spoke to me the most, or not to be dramatic, spoke to me, but the part that was most relatable is that, and I loved it, and this comes from direction, obviously, is that they're both, especially Charlie, Adam Driver's character, he's got to stay busy. I'm talking to you. We're having a discussion, but I got to be folding stuff in the kitchen. I got to be doing this. I got to be doing dishes. I need to be distracted because this is a serious discussion. And they're not just the entire 10-minute discussion or argument that it evolves to. That it's not just them, and what kind of, and although some of the memes were hilarious, don't get me wrong, Lou, what bothered me slightly about some of the memes, like, that some people just assumed, this is what the movie is, a couple of divorced people yelling at each other.
Right.
Like, no, it's so much more than that. Like, the great part and the majority of the scene leading up to this is the best part of it, that the yelling at each other is not the best part of it, because it the building to this part of it is what is the best part, that they didn't just start yelling at each other, that they got to that part of, like, no, well, you, well, then you, and then it's, I mean, it's like a tennis match. Like, it's going back and forth. And then now we're going to have the serious moment. And then it gets to that point where they both drive each other, because there's so much emotional investment in their relationship that it drives Charlie to say something that he knows virtually immediately, as soon as he utters it, that he shouldn't have said it out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where he says, I wish you were dead. I wish you had an illness, and I wish you died, or I wish you were dead. And 5 seconds later, he goes, God, that was stupid. I don't mean that. And you see that immediately. That's not just, I wish you were dead scene. Mm-hmm. Like, or like, no, it's So that part of the screaming or he punches the wall and whatnot. But the most impressive part of me, to me, for that scene is the building up to that, where they're both kind of just picking at each other a little bit and a little bit of stabs and like passive aggressive. I'm just doing this. And it builds to that point that doesn't just start from a point of, all right, well, you're an asshole. Well, you're a female negative word. And now we're going to yell at each other. Like it builds to that. And that's why also wonderful direction for Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson is done in that scene as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much to break down on that. Like the interesting thing is we talked a little bit earlier about how, you know, if a lawyer hadn't gotten involved, what would the outcome have been? Yeah. And I think that scene is proof that it was going to go, the two of them weren't incapable of talking about their issues.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like if it proved the necessity of the, you know, the brutality of the procedures, mm-hmm. that's it right there. Cause they sit there and they casually agree, okay, we're going to sit here and we're going to talk this out, and they're incapable of doing so.
Yeah. Because there is so much emotional investment mm-hmm. that you think you can go in that situation like, okay, well, we both respect one another. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. we both might be not in love with each other anymore mm-hmm. or whatever. But, you know, there's mutual respect there. Like, I mutual respect you as a person. Well, this should be okay. Mm-hmm. But, like, no, it isn't.
Yeah, ego gets involved and past hurts get involved and everything else. And I think you're right, Lou. What this movie might also do is kind of show you, like, even though watching the divorce process is maddening and you're like, oh my God, why did they have to even get involved? Because in the beginning, they've got, right, the purest intentions of like, no, we're not going to use divorce lawyers. But there are so many divorces that start off with that argument. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they go to divorce lawyers because they realize they can't get through it without arbitration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody has to step in because they're incapable of it. And then the other thing, and I'm glad you both brought it up, was that, you know, the memes are hilarious. I've seen plenty that make me laugh. I've made a couple that I, you know, and that's great. But yeah, the one thing about, and I know that's probably great to get like social media buzz about a movie, and I don't know if it's helping keep that movie like in the, you know, popular conversation, you know, which is hard to do for a movie that's this kind of, you know, very kind of simple, you know, whatever. But if you think that's what this movie is about, I encourage you to check it out, because there's so much more. And that scene happens an hour and a half into the film.
Exactly.
It is in the final act of the story. So it's also earned by these characters, because you've watched them, as we've talked about, struggle with emotions. Mm-hmm. And keep it all bottled in. And that is the moment where it's all let out. And it is almost like that cathartic moment for the two of them, because once that happens, the turnaround starts to happen, and they do start to rebuild that relationship to get to that even playing field.
Well said, Lou. That is really a pivot point. Where they both, like, Adam Driver realizes what he says an awful thing about her wishing she was dead that he actually doesn't mean. And she knows immediately that he doesn't mean that because of her putting her hand on him going, I know you don't mean that. And this is where we're at right now. And this sucks for both of us. And it really is. It is a perfect pivot point to that. That's not just, we're a divorced couple having a shouting match, which the internet just kind of looks at like, oh, so this is one of those kind of movies. Like, no, it's not. It's totally not.
Mm-mm. No. So let's talk about some of the scenes then that maybe aren't getting memefied making us speak reductively about the movie. Because I do think this movie has so many great scenes, and all these like little kind of snippets and slices of life. So let's open it up before we get to the Oscar stuff to talk about, you know, any favorite scenes that we haven't gotten to yet. Tim, how about you?
So I'm particular to, I'm going to sound like I'm sort of, some sort of like, well, I'm someone who enjoys music in films because no one else does. That's totally not the case. But Randy Newman and his music in this movie, and I know it's been nominated, but it hasn't been nominated for an Oscar, correct?
He's nominated for Best Score.
Yeah. He is nominated. Okay. Thank you for
correcting. He's up against his cousin, Thomas Newman.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And I mean, I've been a fan of Randy Newman since his Natural Days and for his lesser known, which I think is his best work, in my humble opinion, a movie called Avalon, where he brilliantly uses piano and whatnot. But I hear that it's great to hear Randy Newman, Avalon type music come through in this movie in a little bit. But it's also nice because it's not used throughout the entire movie, that it's used fairly strategically. And one of my favorite scenes, and I'll allude this to my own personal experience, because I think when Scarlett Johansson has that moment of, this is not my husband anymore, which I talked about earlier, for, you know, walking away and having that, you know, her, you know, having the tears roll down her face, is that when Charlie, Adam Driver, is reading a story with the three of them in bed, and he's done the story, and his son says, I'm going to stay here with mommy, and he is like, okay, that's fine. He comes out of bed, and then he steps into the hallway, and you hear Randy Newman's music chime in at the perfect point, because that's what his music freaking does, and Adam Driver, Charlie's character, is, you know, looking at the pictures of the three of them, and also him and Scarlett Johansson together. And I think that's Charlie's moment of realizing this is done. This doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. This is now, the pictures that I'm looking at are now officially the past. So that particular moment to me in the movie, when my first watching, first viewing of it, was when that's where it hit, like, for me, because I'm familiar with that moment. I know that moment. So when all of a sudden you hear Randy Newman's music behind you, you're like, oh God, like, like, well, that's that'll do it. That'll do it to you. Mm-hmm. So that particular scene for me was when adding in the score. Randy Newman's score in there in that particular scene is particularly, you know, effective to me as well, when factoring in everything with the whole movie, you know, involved as a whole.
Mm-hmm. All right, Aaron, how about you?
You know, I think there's a lot of scenes that are super clever. This is a very clever movie. Outside of just even the divorce story, there's a lot of side stories and side characters that it's witty. I loved all of the banter back and forth, like, kind of showcasing the, like, you know, flavor of dysfunction in Nicole's home with her mother and her sister and everything. Cause it's like, that is part of it. Like, we're all, like, related to a family, and it's like, then they're getting involved. I love that. I loved this. I did like the scene with the lawyers, like, mm-hmm. how kind of showing different types of lawyers and, like, what kind of divorce lawyers there are out there. Like, Ray Liotta is, like, he's a bulldog. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute bulldog. Laura Dern is a little bit more of a watered down version of him, I feel like. Like, she seems like she's got more of a soul than Ray Liotta's character in this film. And then you've got, Alan, why am I blanking? Alda?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's just like, he's just the sweetest. But even still, like, as he's giving information, like, the message, I feel like, to me, or the lens I was seeing it through, is still like, all of your options are still maddening. It doesn't matter how sweet the lawyer is or how, you know, how knowledgeable they are or anything. It's still maddening, the process. And I think each one did it in a in a fabulous way.
There was a line that about Alan Alda's character when that I missed the first time that I caught the second time when Charlie gets the lawyer through his mother-in-law, Julie Haggerty's character, who she's just such a delight.
Bring on the phone to him, like,
oh my so God.
Yeah. But she mentions the line about how he got pushed out of his office, his old law firm. So now he's like, now he's like in this like strip mall. He's like Saul Goodman, basically, you know, he's like Saul with a soul, but, but you get the sense that I was like, oh, and he gets fired. Charlie fires him because he's too nice. That it's like, oh, even that character, like there are enough lines that you now know who that character is. He's
a
popular lawyer. He got pushed out. Now he's doing this, but he lost his killer instinct. And he's basically like, he's Willie Loman at this point in his life that he's just like, you know, and I, it's like, that's just, and that's an ancillary character who's in only in a third of the film, but we know so much about him.
Oh, such an impact.
Yeah. And he makes
I think it's also speaking to like the divorce process. It's like, oh, well, you're not cutthroat enough for the way that this process goes in America. So like, sorry.
Yeah. Exactly. Eat or get eaten. So he wants, you know, he doesn't want Ray Liotta at first. He wants cuddly Alan Alda, which who wouldn't? But like, but it doesn't work because Laura Dern's character is coming. She's loaded for bear. And she knows the system and she is very good at her job. So let's dive into her for a minute before the last thing I want to talk about is her character, because I think this really is a film that's driven by the two main characters. But interestingly enough, at awards, as we're recording this now, the one kind of constant award that Marriage Story is picking up is for Laura Dern's performance. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an inevitability that seems to be around her this season that's kind of almost causing a little bit of backlash. So I kind of want to talk a little bit about her performance and because I've heard some criticisms that people have found it maybe derivative of her character from Big Little Lies, or some people find it to be maybe one note or not, flashy enough. What are your guys' thoughts on that? And maybe that'll segue us into the rest of the Oscar talk here.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Okay, so I'm in the camp that I feel like I just came off of two seasons of Big Little Lies. Mm-hmm. So I am not married to Ellie Sattler from Jurassic Park like I maybe once would have been. So I have seen her play a very cutthroat character now for two seasons. So I think where people are going like, oh my gosh, she's got such a range. It's like, she just played this character. What I do think, however, is that her character was given a lot of commentary in her lines on kind of, you know, speaking to the expectations that are put on women to be all these things, to be mothers, to be this, to be that. And so I guess where I'm going with that is it's what she delivered. I think that everyone is feeling so compelled, not her performance in delivering it. And I think that's where I'm coming from, that with all due respect, I think you could have had anyone in there as Laura Dern's character delivering that speech in that way, I think would have been just as compelling for me.
Tim, your thoughts?
Aaron, you're exactly right. In that whole scene where Laura is telling Nicole and Scarlett Johansson that, you know, we're expected to be all these things and making the reference to, you know, Mary, the mother of Jesus. And she hits it perfectly. And she plays so freaking well the queen of passive aggressiveness. And where it's most notable to me anyway, is the scene where they have the consultation with Alan Alda when he's actually representing Charlie. And she is at one moment She is a shark of a lawyer. And like, well, no, we're living in LA. This is how it's going to be. And oh, by the way, she goes to get something to drink for Charlie and it says, oh, yeah, I saw that play. You're brilliant. Oh, yeah, it's great. And then the next second, no, I'm a lawyer and I'm here to work for my client. And there is no sort of like, well, who is she? Like, you know, you know exactly who she is, that she is that shark of a lawyer, but she just transitions, bounces back and plays that sort of character, plays both sides so well in such an effective where you want to hate her because she's a lawyer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's a lawyer. You want to hate lawyers, right? Like but she's also plays perfectly in that I'm also your therapist and I'm also there for you. And she plays both those roles so well back and forth seamlessly that it's downright impressive. Mm-hmm. Where she is that I'm not saying that she's doing both. And that's the thing. She's not doing both sides in a fake manner. I think her character honestly does have like, no, that sucks. I've been in your position. That really does suck. Mm-hmm. And then also like, oh, you know what? I do feel that way, but also in another way, like, no, I'm a lawyer and this is BS and this is how it's supposed to be. And she, the way she bounces back and forth so efficiently in that way is, I mean, to me, rather impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, and I'll say this, I haven't gotten to Big Little Lies yet, so I can't compare and contrast the characters.
Sure.
What I think to me, and we talked a little bit about this, it's not the typical Oscar showy performance. She has the monologue at the end about, you know, the Mary speech. But what I like about that is I think we're trained in movies to look at lawyers negatively, specifically divorce lawyers. And we see she does hit those body blows. You know, she's the one who cuts to the core. Like she takes all these little things and twists the knife, which is her job to do. But then she also, I think her character comes at it from, I don't want to say noble, that's probably an overreach, but from a sincere place of, this is the standard that women have to have. It's messed up, but this is what the standard. So I'm going to fight as hard as I can for my clients who they talk about her representing other women in divorce cases because mm-hmm. this is the standard and I need to make sure that my clients get what they need because I think the system is rigged against women.
Yep.
And as we talked about in that initial scene, where she opens up, she asks, she takes her shoes off, she gets on the couch, she sits there. And this is where I'll disagree with you slightly, Aaron, because I don't know if there's an actress who could do that and not make it feel like it's a lawyer trying to be do a trick, Scarlett Johansson. Like I think
it's seamless for her. It's just right. Like, oh wow,
that moment.
I'm like, oh, she did. Yeah. Maybe she really does care.
Yeah, exactly. She seems like she genuinely cares for Scarlett Johansson, and for her character, and she seems sincere when she's complimenting Charlie on her play on the plays. And in her mind, all of this is business. It's like in her mind, the interesting thing is like the bell rings, ding ding. I'm throwing bombs. The bell rings, neutral corner. We're shaking hands and everything's good. You know, the only thing is we don't ever hear the bell. It's like, you know,
exactly.
She's the one who's like, oh, hey, we're going to be friends now. Oh, tell us about how you neglect your child. You know,
yeah,
and she fights at, and sorry, just real quick, which I was kind of just in this discussion, is that her fighting dirty, I think, is motivated by like that with the Mary speech, that like, hey, you know, the patriarchy is BS and that's their dirty way of fighting. I'm gonna fight fire with fire and I'm gonna fight dirty back.
Yeah,
but I'm also gonna do it in a way that's quasi gentle as well, but I'm still going to let you know that this is BS.
Yeah. I'm going to fight. I'm going to fight like hell for my people, but I come at it from a place of empathy.
Yep.
And I think that's a really tricky balance because I think that I do think that monologue in the hands, in not of anybody else. I won't say anybody else, but I would say, I think she delivers that monologue in a way that I don't feel like she's coming off as self-righteous. I think she's coming off as earnest. So, you know, I understand. I hear the criticism that's like, well, this is, you know, similar to another role and why are we giving her awards? But, you know, I think, at the same time, every scene she's in, I think she nails. So I don't know if you can ask more of a supporting actress performance.
I want to hear Aaron's last word.
Denying how talented she is, for sure. I think for me, if I'm trying to articulate what it is that her character to me came across as a woman scorned. And I think that was where I was having a difficult time relating, in that she gave me an impression that she would burn a man to the ground.
Okay.
That doesn't connect with me. And I think that might be also why, like, I loved the speech. Don't get me wrong. Cause I do agree. I think that's fabulous writing. So it might just be like that point. And who knows, I could be totally wrong. That was just what came to me, but that's why we're on these podcasts, right? To discuss it and share the view.
That's right.
Because sure. I love hearing your point of view on it. These are things I'm going to have to ruminate and I'm going to have to watch again.
Right. Well, and we should point out, you know, this is, you know, we love the Oscars. We love award seasons, but it's so hard. I mean, if you look at who she's nominated against for Best Supporting Actress, it's Kathy Bates, for Richard Jewell, Scarlett Johansson for Jojo Rabbit, Florence Pugh for Little Women, and Margot Robbie for Bombshell. Again, all different types of characters and different types of films. So who's to say, you know, what is your standard of who Best Supporting Actress? You know, what's your standard of how you choose to vote? And I know a lot of it's based on, sometimes it's based on a career body of work, which Laura Dern certainly has. She's been a fabulous actress for years now. So she's due for that, as opposed to someone like Kathy Bates, who's won multiple Oscars or whatever, or you know, Florence Pugh and Margot Robbie, who are fairly new to Hollywood, or Scarlett Johansson, who seems like she's going to be nominated into perpetuity for whatever she does. So there's some of that too, but I do think, like, if we're just talking about, is it an award worthy performance? Well, based on your ballot, who knows, but you know, is it a good performance? Is it a great performance? But I like the fact that we have different opinions on here about it, because, you know, you guys watch, you hear us talk, now go, you know, you watch the movie, give your own thoughts to it. So let's get into the rest of the awards then. So we talked about Laura Dern's nominated for Best Supporting Actress. We mentioned the awards up at the top, but just in case you forgot, Best Actor, Best Actress, Score, Picture, Screenplay. Of those six, what do you hope Marriage Story will walk away with, and what do you think it's going to walk away with? Tim, we'll start with you.
I alluded to it earlier, but I hope that Randy Newman would win, just because of where, and I'm not sure, and maybe if you guys can help me with this, but if he has a say on where exactly the music is interjected, I know it's probably by committee. But he still wrote the music in a way where he's inspired by the scenes itself. And so, I mean, just the way where the music is put in the movie is done brilliantly, in my opinion. But because he's Randy Newman, he's not going to win an Oscar. That's just how it goes for Randy Newman.
Right. It took him like 20 years to win one. And I think he finally won. He won one for a song. I think.
But I'm also just partial to, and this is just my own personal style, I'm as partial as style of music, and what he's, I particularly love when he focuses more on piano focused orchestrations as opposed to, you know, entire orchestra or whatnot. So I would hope they would win there, but I don't think he will. But I do think Laura Dern will win, based on what she's already won. I think she's won virtually everything. Correct, Lou? I mean, SAG.
Yep. SAG, Golden Globe. Yep.
That would, barring any real shocker. And I wouldn't look at that as, I guess, whatever. I wouldn't give in to that. I would say, no, that's well-deserved. I think I look at that performance, and she did a terrific job. I wouldn't degrade that at all. So those are the things that I would hope Randy Newman would win, but he won't. But I really feel like Laura Dern will win for sure.
All right, Aaron, how about you? You got any rooting interest for Marriage Story in any of these awards?
I think Laura Dern's going to take it home, and I'm okay with that. Like, I mean, really, I don't have a problem with it, for sure, even based on my opinions. But, you know, that seems to be going that direction. Am I sad about Marriage Story taking home any of these awards? No. I mean, it's a great movie. It's just not, like you said earlier, Lou, it's not a spectacular, it's not a spectacle, but it's an amazing story. So I'd be kind of, I think it'd be cool if it took home best original screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it walking home with anything else. I mean, there's such heavy competition. Yeah. I mean, like, I think Jeremy said in another podcast, it's just an embarrassment of riches this year.
Mm-hmm.
And all around.
Yeah, this is just a sick year in terms of, it is so stacked with, you know, we've got 9 Best Picture nominees. I've seen 8 so far, and I can't say that I've disliked any of them or thought any of them were like bad movies or not very good, which is something I could not say last year about more than one nominee and even the eventual winner. So I agree. There doesn't seem to me, if I'm looking at, you know, I know we're going to break down, I don't know if I'm going to be on that podcast or not, but if I look just at the competition supporting actress, I don't see an upset there by any of those actresses. So I do think it's probably Laura Dern's. I do think it's a shame that in a movie that has 2 such powerhouse lead performances that both Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson probably won't win. Because it is, they're up against, it's that kind of naturalistic style versus the immersion style where you have Joaquin Phoenix transforming himself into the Joker and Renee Zellweger, you know, transforming herself into Judy Garland. They're like, and I'm not, again, they're both, it's all acting. It's all like, they're all different. It's just different styles. And I think those naturalistic performances tend to get overlooked, especially when you're talking in lead categories. Yeah. I would say I'd root for an original screenplay, but man, that's a sick category. Cause you have that Parasite.
That would be my next, that would be my hope.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Original screenplay.
And then like my heart would be for the one that would be for Knives Out because it's the only nomination it has.
Yeah.
And so it can only win that one. And I love that movie so much that I was like, oh, but Marriage Story is so well written. It's so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as far as Best Picture goes, I don't think it's going to win. I think it's, you know, but if, I would be delighted if it did, because it, to me, does, it seems like a movie that, like, if it, this movie came out in the 80s, it would win everything.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah.
It's got like that, you know, I know Kramer versus Kramer has, you know, obviously the subject matter is the same, but like a Terms of Endearment type, on Golden Pond type. It feels like that, only like, so it's like in another, and it, this is, you know, for better or worse, it feels like a throwback to those kind of like character driven films that, you know, but sadly it's not, you know, it's got to go up against a war picture and a Scorsese 3-hour epic and, you know,
because of course,
you know, it's just has movies that just have the technical specs on it that, you know, are not, you know, are just different. And
that's the way it is.
it's just the way it is.
But you know, it's like unbelievable that Netflix this year has given us, like, they've given us Marriage Story, they've given us The Irishman, like this has been an amazing year for prestige in streaming platforms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. 3 of my favorite movies this year are from Netflix. This one, Irishman, and Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah.
Which I think was great too. And I think that Netflix, and it does feel, I don't know if Netflix should get all the credit for this, but it feels like Netflix has caused other studios to up their game a little bit to get back into the prestige kind of award stuff. Whereas, you know, the past couple of years, it's been kind of, you know, been you know, lean. Meh. Been a little yeah. lean, you know.
You know, there you go. Yeah.
So you know, so it's encouraging for the future, and it's encouraging for a movie like Marriage Story, because I don't think a movie like Marriage Story could get that wide of a release.
No.
In today's market, unless it gets a lot of awards show cred, even with two well-known, recognizable actors on board. So
yeah.
We didn't talk about Noah Baumbach did not get nominated for Best Director, and I'm kind of disappointed in that. But at the same time, you look at that slate again, and it's bonkers. And
I think he
probably was even seventh behind Greta Gerwig at number six as someone who just missed the cut. So, but anyway, so we'll see. I will be happy to see Marriage Story walk away with whatever it can get. And so even if, you know, Laura Dern isn't maybe the thing that jumps to mind for Marriage Story, the fact that Marriage Story is going to walk away with at least one Oscar that night will make me happy, because I do like this movie a lot. So I want to thank you both for joining us. I know we talked at length. I think there's so much we didn't even cover. We didn't talk about the two musical numbers, but you know, hey,
yeah,
Adam Driver singing a song from Company. Get out of here.
That's what happens when your brother no shows us. Cause Patrick would be all over talking about some Sondheim.
Him and I talked about I'm going to watch this. I want you to watch it. And we like sort of had a discussion about it, but I didn't tell him like, you really should be on with Lou and I. So I'll take the heat from that, Lou. Okay.
I saw and I texted him immediately as soon as I heard that song. I was like, oh, can we talk about this yet? Have you seen this? Are we okay to talk about that? Okay.
Like, hey, just FYI, Patrick, there's Sondheim in this movie. Like,
yeah. So, but anyway, I want to thank you both. I know we've got so much more content coming up. Aaron, do you got any more Oscar spotlights that you've been on that we can look forward to?
You can go back and look at Ford versus Ferrari, which was released yesterday. I am also going to be on the 1917 podcast that is coming out this week. And then you have nobly signed me up for an Oscar category spotlight. Oh, I'll be on that one.
Yeah, I did that accidentally because we volunteered. I like Jeremy threw it up there about who wants to take a category. And I said, well, Aaron and I should do Best Actor so we can just talk about Taron Egerton and Eddie Murphy for an hour, even though. And how nice. How both of them should be nominated and neither of them are, and Jeremy took us seriously, so we may or may not get to talk about that. We'll revisit Adam Driver's performance there too. You can go back and you can hear Aaron and I again break down another Netflix movie. We talked about The Irishman at length, which apparently is our thing. We talked about The Irishman and that's already out there. You can find that in our feed. But I know every other Best Picture movie is out there. I know there's probably, and I think you're going to have a re-release of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which you all want.
Wow,
look at you. You're just dominating. You
Aaron's
are
everywhere, y'all.
You're the Laura Dern of our podcast group right now.
I host Oscar spotlights now.
You do. I'm glad somebody can. They can't trust me. I'm too busy with the guilty pleasures. My tastes have been skewed by years of garbage films. So all of that stuff you can find on our Front Row feed, on our Facebook feed, and make sure you're subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. If you want to hear Tim and I talk about a movie that I don't think won any Academy Awards, Bad Boys 2 is in the Pleasures feed now.
No, it's great. I mean, I had a lot of fun with that. I mean, how can you not enjoy just talking the hell out of a, you know, Bruckheimer Bay film? Come on now. I mean,
yeah, we broke down the, you know, We spent about as much time talking about that movie as we did Marriage Story.
I think so. What else can you say? Yeah.
We talked about the Scarlett Johansson monologue for as long as we talked about the dead topless stripper scene.
Oh, jeez.
Content,
everybody. We got it.
We contain multitudes here at the Front Row. But yeah, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare. You can find us at Front Row Reviews with a Z, and go to our Facebook page where you can find out not only all the rest of our Oscar spotlights, but our breakdown in the week leading up to the Academy Awards, breakdown of all the major categories, our predictions, our hopes and wishes of who we think is going to win, who we want to win. It's all hands on deck with the Front Row crew that week. And then, of course, on Oscar night, the big party at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. Make sure if you're in the Springfield area, you get your tickets to that to join the whole Front Row crew in Springfield as we watch the Academy Awards and have all sorts of games and fun times and shenanigans. And if you can't be there, you can always check our Facebook page for live updates throughout the evening. Aaron, did I miss anything else?
No, I think you've got it all, Lou.
Okay, good. All right. Well, that's going to do it. Thank you both again for joining me to talk about this movie. I hope if you haven't seen Marriage Story, make sure you check it out before Oscar night. Check it out whenever. It's on Netflix right now. It's certainly worth your time. I'm glad I got to see it, and I'm glad I got to talk to you too about it. So thank you all for tuning in, and stay tuned for the rest of the week for all of our Oscar spotlights. But until the next time, for the Front Row Network, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Tim Tierney.
And I'm Aaron McCabe.
And as always, we'll see you in the Front Row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.